Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. In Ukraine, the country's farmers and smallholders urgently need more support to avoid a food crisis, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, said on Wednesday, as it announced a $15.5 million initiative to help them. With funding from the European Union, the project will help to keep agricultural production going in Ukraine, after the Russian invasion last February led to the destruction of crops and farm equipment and disruption to supply chains. Local and displaced populations in western Ukraine are among those who need help in the short term, amid rising food insecurity, FAO said. The UN agency also noted that in a recent nationwide assessment, one in four people had reduced or halted agricultural production because of the war. FAO explained that as the war continues, a large number of households, family farms, individual producers and others have found it increasingly difficult to continue operating. Major challenges expected in the next few months in crop and livestock farming include low sale prices at market, a lack of fertilizers and pesticides, and shortages of fuel or electricity to power equipment. UN Human Rights Chief Volker Türk on Wednesday urged governments to reach into your hearts and end arbitrary detention. He called on governments and all detaining authorities globally to amnesty, pardon, or simply release all those detained for exercising their rights. The High Commissioner for Human Rights urged them to review the detention of environmental and climate activists and of those fighting discrimination, along with anyone speaking up against abuses and corruption, journalists jailed for doing their essential work, and human rights defenders. Freeing them would be in line with the vision of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is 75 years old this year, Mr. Türk explained, as he highlighted its call for a world in which all people live free and equal in dignity and rights. To the UN Security Council, where five countries joined its ranks as non-permanent members for the next 2 years. Ecuador, Malta, Mozambique, Japan and Switzerland will have their say, alongside the five permanent and veto-wielding members, China, France, Russia, the United States and the United Kingdom. The remaining members of the 15-strong body are Albania, Brazil, Gabon, Ghana and the United Arab Emirates. They began their terms as non-permanent members of the Council last year. Japan holds the rotating presidency of the Security Council for January, which will see meetings on several situations of international concern, such as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or DPRK, Palestine, West Africa and the Sahel, and Yemen. The devastating impact of Syria's long-running conflict is also on the Council's agenda, with scheduled political, humanitarian, and chemical weapons updates expected from top UN officials. Council members are also expected to vote on a draft resolution confirming the extension of the Syria cross-border aid delivery mechanism. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Coming up after the this morning's headlines from Democracy Now!
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio. I talk about secular high and low points of the week. Attorney Karen Heineman tells us why the Catholic Church can't run public charter schools. Then Dan Barker and actress and comedian Julia Sweeney have a meeting of the minds.
Again, that's coming up after the latest morning headlines of Democracy Now! Today. And I'd like to give you a short report on what's happening at Representative Matt Gaetz nominated Jim Jordan. As a reminder, yesterday he nominated Donald Trump in one of the last rounds of votes held in the House of Representatives. Today he nominated Jim Jordan. Perhaps the Bannon-Trump plan to install Donald Trump as Speaker of the House is failing miserably. And now, the headlines, this morning's headlines from Democracy Now!
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden announced Thursday the United States will begin blocking migrants from Haiti, Nicaragua, and Cuba from applying for asylum if they're apprehended crossing the U.S.-Mexico border outside of ports of entry. The asylum seekers will instead be expelled to Mexico without due process as part of an expansion of the contested Trump-era Title 42 pandemic policy. This comes as the Supreme Court set to decide Title 42's fate in its next session. Biden also announced a small number of Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Cubans will qualify for a program granting them temporary permission to live and work in the U.S. if they apply for the relief from their home countries and already have financial sponsors in the U.S. The announcement came just days before Biden scheduled to visit El Paso, Texas, Sunday to meet with local officials. It'll be Biden's first trip to the U.S.-Mexico border as president. During his remarks Thursday, Biden made no mention of the harsh U.S. sanctions that have contributed to poverty in Nicaragua and Cuba, nor did he acknowledge the catastrophic legacy of U.S. interventions in Haiti.
My message is this. If you're trying to leave Cuba, Nicaragua, or Haiti, you have, and we, or have agreed to begin a journey to America, do not just show up at the border. Stay where you are and apply legally from there. Starting today, if you don't apply through the legal process, you will not be eligible for this new parole program.
In a statement, the American Civil Liberties Union said, quote, Title 42 expulsions were already an unjustifiable misuse of the public health laws. Let's be clear, nothing requires the administration to expand Title 42 while it claims to be preparing for its ending. There is simply no reason why the benefits of a new parole program for Cubans, Nicaraguans, and Haitians must be conditioned on the expansion of dangerous expulsions, the ACLU said. The House of Representatives adjourned for the third consecutive day Thursday evening without electing a House Speaker after Republican leader Kevin McCarthy failed to gain the needed 218 votes after 11 ballots. 20 far-right Republicans continue to oppose McCarthy even after he offered the major concessions, though reports emerged late Thursday some holdouts may be on the verge of throwing their support behind McCarthy. All 212 Democrats backed New York Congressmember Hakeem Jeffries at every round of voting over the past 3 days. Until a House Speaker is elected, no member of the House of Representatives can be sworn in. We'll have the latest on this story after headlines. President Biden is delivering a speech today to mark the two-year anniversary of the deadly January 6th Capitol insurrection. Biden will also award presidential citizens' medals to 12 people who responded to the insurrection and Trump's attacks on democracy after the 2020 election. Among them, Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss, a pair of mother-daughter election workers from Georgia who received death threats and torrents of online abuse from Trump supporters. President Trump again attacked them this past week on social media. Another honoree is former Washington, D.C. police officer Michael Fanone, who was beaten and electrocuted with a taser by the right-wing mob who attacked the Capitol. Fanone called the experience a wake-up call about the dangers of political violence.
People who encouraged and even attended the insurrection are now taking their places as leaders in the new House majority. People like Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who said insurrectionists would have won on January 6th if she had been involved. Or Representative Matt Gaetz, who encouraged voters to arm themselves at the polls.
On Thursday, the partner of deceased Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who died one day after responding to the insurrection, sued Donald Trump and two rioters who attacked Sicknick for his wrongful death. Sicknick died after suffering two strokes. The medical examiner said the events of January 6th, quote, played a role in his condition. We'll have more on the second anniversary of the Capitol insurrection after headlines. South Carolina's Supreme Court struck down the state's six-week ban Thursday, ruling it violates South Carolina's constitution. Meanwhile, Democratic lawmakers in Minnesota have advanced a bill to codify abortion rights in their state, where the procedure is still legal after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in June of last year. But in a blow for reproductive rights, Idaho's Supreme Court upheld a near-total ban on abortion. Idaho's High Court also reaffirmed a law allowing some family members of a fetus to sue health workers who provide an abortion, and a law criminalizing health providers who perform the procedure after cardiac activity is detected, which can happen as early as 4 to 6 weeks into a pregnancy. Russian President Vladimir Putin has unilaterally declared a 36-hour ceasefire in Ukraine to mark Russian Orthodox Christmas. Despite the declaration, fighting continued today along the Eastern Front in Kyiv. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky rejected Putin's truce, saying Russia wants to use Christmas as a pretext to stop Ukrainian advances in the Russian-occupied Donbass region.
They now want to use Christmas as a cover, albeit briefly, to stop the advances of our boys in Donbass and bring equipment, munitions, and mobilized troops closer to our positions.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Thursday he would welcome any truce in Ukraine during Orthodox Christmas, but warned talks between Moscow and Kyiv to bring the war to a permanent end are not yet possible.
I think we are still not in a situation where we can see peace in the immediate horizon. Peace that we believe will have to come one day, and peace based on the UN Charter and international law.
Guterres' remarks came after Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan offered to mediate an end to the war in Ukraine. This week, the U.S., Germany, and France announced plans to supply Ukraine with armored combat vehicles, including French-made light tanks and U.S.-made Bradley fighting vehicles. The 50 Bradleys would be part of a new U.S. military aid package to Ukraine worth nearly $3 billion. The U.N. Security Council Thursday called for maintaining status quo at Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Following a highly criticized visit to the site by Israel's new extremist security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir. But the Security Council did not commit to any action in response to the provocation by Israel. For decades, the Al-Aqsa Mosque has only allowed Muslims to worship at the holy site. Meanwhile, a new proposal by the freshly installed far-right government coalition led by Benjamin Netanyahu would sharply limit judicial powers by allowing a simple majority of lawmakers to invalidate Israeli Supreme Court decisions. Elsewhere, the longest-serving Palestinian prisoner in Israel, Karim Yunis, was freed Thursday after spending more than 40 years behind bars. Yunis was arrested in 1983 over the killing of an Israeli soldier. He was welcomed home in his village of Ara, which is located within Israel. Yunis also visited the gravesite of his mother, who died just 8 months ago. He spoke when he was released.
It is clear for everyone now that the Israeli government, especially the current one, is seeking to subdue our people. They want us to be their slaves. They want us to be nothing so they can use us always. We say that this is not going to happen, and they will not get what they want.
Here in the United States, The Nation is reporting Harvard's Kennedy School of Government has withdrawn a fellowship from the former head of Human Rights Watch, Kenneth Roth, over Roth and Human Rights Watch's condemnation of Israeli human rights abuses. China says it will reopen its border with Hong Kong this weekend after 3 years of pandemic restrictions that left Hong Kong largely cut off from the Chinese mainland. The reopening comes after the World Health Organization accused China of downplaying the severity of a massive COVID-19 surge that's going largely unreported in China's official statistics. This is the WHO's Emergencies Director, Mike Ryan.
We believe that the current numbers being published from China underrepresent the true impact of the disease in terms of hospital admissions, in terms of ICU admissions, and particularly in terms of death.
China has been reporting daily COVID deaths in the single digits, even as experts say it's in the midst of a surge that could kill hundreds of thousands of people. Meanwhile, the European Union has urged member nations to require travelers from China to show proof of a recent negative coronavirus test, and suggested governments should expand genomic surveillance at airports for new coronavirus variants. Chinese officials rejected the restrictions as discriminatory and politically motivated. They also denied underrepresenting the severity of China's COVID outbreak. In Utah, 8 people were found dead at a home in the town of Enoch on Wednesday in an apparent murder-suicide. Authorities say 42-year-old Michael Haight fatally shot his mother-in-law, his wife, and their 5 children before turning the gun on himself. The killings came 2 weeks after Haight's spouse filed for divorce. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have already been 12 mass shootings in the United States since the start of the new year. And here in New York, Uber drivers held a one-day strike Thursday as they continue to demand the ride-hailing corporation drop its lawsuit aimed at blocking a pay raise approved by the Taxi and Limousine Commission. It's the second 24-hour strike by Uber drivers since wage increases failed to go into effect in December. Democracy Now! Spoke with Bhairavi Desai, the executive director of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, at a picket line outside Uber's New York headquarters Thursday.
This was a raise that was in the hands of the drivers. The city of New York voted on it after almost a year of public hearings. Uber, in the middle of the night, snatched this raise out of the drivers' hands to put it in their own pockets. Meanwhile, in the same lawsuit Uber's filed to stop this raise for the drivers, they've admitted that they've been charging the public in New York City 48% more since 2019. You know, the only ones that haven't gotten this increase are the drivers, and they're the ones that really desperately need it.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report.
That was Amy Goodman, and you can always watch and listen to Democracy Now! At democracynow.org. As it stands right now, Representative Kevin McCarthy of California has lost the 12th vote as of today by a narrower margin than yesterday. That's as it stands now. They'll be holding another vote. Maybe by the time we get done here with the latest Free Thought Radio from the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcome to Free Thought Radio's first show of 2023, and here's wishing you a bright and secular new year. My co-host, the original Friendly Neighborhood Atheist, Dan Barker, is actually in India, leaving me to pilot solo today, and we are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which does produce this weekly radio show and podcast. Regular listeners know that FFRF works to buttress that precious constitutional principle of separation between religion and government, which is a more than full-time job for about 30 staffers at FFRF. FFRF also serves as the nation's largest membership association for freethinkers. That's individuals who are personally free from religion, whether atheists, agnostics, rationalists, or humanists. We are at 39,400 members as of December 31st and are so eager to climb to 40,000. So please sign up today at fffrf.org/join or click the Ask for Info link at our webpage and we'll send or email you a comp issue of our lively newspaper, Free Thought Today, and other info so you can feel better acquainted. And then you can join us. This is the January 5th, 2023 episode of Free Thought Radio, and our engineer, my engineer today, is Grant Blaschka with Audio for the Arts, and we're in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio here at Free Thought Hall, the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, based in Madison, Wisconsin. So although Dan isn't here, he will be sort of. Today will be a meeting of the minds with Saturday Night Live alumna and Letting Go of God philosopher, actress, and comedian Julia Sweeney, and my absent co-host, Dan Barker, author of Godless. We're going to hear their recent public conversation at FFRS National Convention last fall. And I still remember meeting Julia Sweeney for the first time and being almost tongue-tied and bowled over around 2005 before she finished her amazing Letting Go of God One Woman show. And she surprised me by telling me she was bowled over to meet Dan Barker's spouse. She told me she loved Dan's book, Losing Faith in Faith, and was trying to come up with a good title for her show, which she did with Letting Go of God. Anyway, their entertaining conversation will come up on the second half of today's show. And before that, I'm going to have a conversation with Patrick O'Reilly legal fellow Karen Heineman, and we're going to be talking about a terrible opinion by the Oklahoma Attorney General that it's perfectly all right for the Roman Catholic Church to run a public charter school. And before I get to some fun news, a nod to the anniversary today of the birth of Butterfly McQueen, born January 8, 1911, best known for her demeaning role as Prissy in the 1939 movie Gone with the Wind, which she said was not a pleasant part to play. Typecast as a slave or a maid, she earned her BA in 1974 at the age of 64 and became one of FFRF's first lifetime members. And when interviewed about her interest in being a lifetime member of FFRF, she told the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, "As my ancestors are free from slavery, I am free from the slavery of religion." This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist, FFRF attorney Liz Cavell and FFRF Equal Justice Works legal fellow Kat Grant give us a sneak preview of what to expect in the legal scene in 2023. You can catch that entire lively show on FFRF's YouTube channel. Look for Ask an Atheist playlist. On our TV show coming up on Sunday, Free Thought Matters, our guest is former gospel producer and songwriter Andre Forbes, who was and is the producer of FFRF's Godless Gospel Chorus, which had a spectacular unveiling at FFRF's National Convention. We've played some of that music on this show before. Dan, who served as the project's executive producer, talks with Andre about Godless Gospel and about Andre's poignant loss of faith story. We have a little excerpt.
The whole process is just very interesting because, you know, coming from gospel music, that was my life. Going to, I say still gospel music, but the lyrics are different now. It's an interesting experience to kind of like just see how those lyrics still work over the music. It was very interesting because I've just been used to doing gospel music with gospel lyrics. So I was very excited to be doing this project.
But you still got to write the words, I believe, but now what do you believe in? Why did you write a song called I Believe in Honesty?
Well, because exactly that. There were times when I was in church or I'd be in like Bible study or just having conversations with people. And I felt like I couldn't really be honest about what I was thinking. I felt like if I would have shared that, you know, I'm having doubts about God, if I'm having doubts about everything that I've been taught to believe is true, they look at me like an outsider, or they wouldn't respect me anymore, or they would think I was possessed or something. You know, I just wanted to write a song that talked about being honest, you know, because I don't feel that a lot of people can be honest in church. I think a lot of times they feel the way I do, but they feel locked into the environment and the beliefs that they've been taught. A place where they, you know, they don't feel the freedom to just be honest and say how they feel or talk about it.
You can watch that full interview anytime on the Free Thought Matters playlist on FFRF's YouTube channel. We also air the program in 13 major cities on Sunday morning. Check to see if we play in your area by going to ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters. And now on to news. We have some good news. FFRF persuaded Chico Unified School District in California to paint over part of a mural that contained lines from Psalms saying, "Praise God from whom all blessings flow." Well, we praise FFRF attorney Chris Line for writing that legal complaint letter and the school district for remedying this egregious violation. And speaking of religion and government, FFRF is encouraging our members and listeners to this show to please contact your member of Congress to boycott the upcoming National Prayer Breakfast. This annual event is put on in early February by a nefarious, shadowy private group called the Fellowship. It sounds like a governmental group, but it isn't. It's a gotcha issue, though, for presidents, Supreme Court justices, cabinet members, and members of Congress who are traditionally suckered into supporting it. But it is a politically divisive group that hobnobs with dictators and promotes anti-LGBTQ policies around the world. Your member of Congress should be urged to shun this theocratic shindig. You can contact your rep by going to actionalerts at ffrf.org/action. And in other not-so-good news, Religious News Service reports that Congress's new class has a much higher percentage of Christians than found in the American public. Christians comprise 88% of the voting members of the 11th Congress, who are supposed to be sworn in sometime this week. Who knows when it will happen? As we are recording this, it hasn't happened yet. But alas, they have not changed. The demographics are changing, but Congress's demographics have not changed from years past. In the general population, Christians have dropped from 78% of the population in 2007 to the current 63%. Yet that's 88% of Congress identifying as Christian. Almost a third of Americans are religiously unaffiliated, yet only Senator Kyrsten Sinema and Representative Jared Huffman identify as unaffiliated. And of course, Huffman, who's been on this show, is an open agnostic humanist and co-chair of the Congressional Freethought Caucus and is providing wonderful leadership. But there's a very interesting fellow new to Congress, California Democrat Robert Garcia. He's the former mayor of Long Beach. He's a proud representative of the LGBTQ plus community. And he announced via Twitter, creating quite a stir, that he will be proudly swearing into Congress on the U.S. Constitution. So, yay, Garcia. He said underneath the Constitution would be items that mean something to him, including a photo of his parents, whom he lost to COVID, his U.S. citizenship certificate, and an original Superman number one from the Library of Congress makes a great change from the Bible. And maybe we can persuade Representative Garcia to come on Free Thought Radio. And he identifies as a Catholic, yet clearly shows an understanding of the need to pledge allegiance to the Constitution. And in fact, that's what the oath of office is all about, our secular constitution. So why on earth do representatives and senators put their hand on a Bible when they are swearing to uphold our secular constitution? So that's a high point for the week. Now a low point. Tucker Carlson said in a recent interview,
"Well, I must say my tolerance for atheism has really dwindled to nothing at this point. My tolerance for people who are agnostic or aren't really sure.
I totally agree with this. Yeah.
But the idea that there are people who are completely certain as a matter of religious faith that there's no God, I just find it hilarious and like so childish. I just can't take it seriously."
So my tolerance for Tucker Carlson long ago dwindled to nothing. Enough said. And speaking of another absurdity, did you see that Donald Trump Jr., following in the lead of snake oil salesmen, is now selling Bibles via social media? And this is what he tweeted out.
"With American Judeo-Christian values under attack, there could be no better time than to re-up our commitment to America and to the Christian values that this country was founded on. Go check out the We the People Bible, made in America, printed in America, assembled in America. You're going to love it, and I think the people in your life probably need it too."
So, yes, he is promoting what he calls a We the People Bible. Now, those are the beginning words of the preamble of the U.S. Constitution, a secular document that has no Bible, no God, no references to religion, except exclusionary. So what a contradiction that is when he says he's defending America's so-called Judeo-Christian values that he, of course, claims are under attack. It's particularly ridiculous because it's a King James version of the Bible that he then says was, quote, made, printed, and assembled in America. Well, King James wasn't American, nor is the Bible. In fact, the Bible is anti-American or un-American as it fosters theocracy, subjugation of women, racism and slavery, homophobia, and anti-egalitarianism. So I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. When we come back from the break, I'll be speaking with FFRF legal fellow Karen Heineman about an off-the-wall opinion proffered by the Attorney General of Oklahoma that Catholic churches can run public charter schools in Oklahoma, and Karen will tell you why that certainly ain't kosher and what FFRF is doing about it. And then we will hear from Julia Sweeney and Dan Barker.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, solo hosting for Free Thought Radio this week, but glad to have an in-person guest here with me now, Karen Heineman, who serves as FFRF's Patrick O'Reilly Legal Fellow. Thank you for coming back on Free Thought Radio, Karen.
Thank you for having me. I'm not a good substitute for Dan, but I'll try my best here to keep conversation going.
Well, you'll be a lot more legal than Dan.
Probably.
So, Karen, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, thanks to your legal research, is contesting the Oklahoma Attorney General's opinion that a charter school may be religiously affiliated and that a religious entity such as the Catholic Church can operate a public school. Can you explain the background behind the memo that the Freedom From Religion Foundation just wrote? It's getting a lot of attention, media attention in Oklahoma, in how Oklahoma Attorney General John O'Connor got it so wrong.
Yeah. So there's a report that a Catholic diocese is going to apply to operate a charter school. And as the statutory framework in Oklahoma stands right now, that can't happen. So you have the Oklahoma Charter Schools Act, and that is essentially what establishes charter schools. So it says right in the act that charter schools are public schools. There's a contract or a charter with a public sponsor, governmental oversight. The Charter Schools Act does a pretty good job at really applying all the legal obligations that would go along with any kind of public body to these charter schools. Yet, Attorney General O'Connor has decided there's enough apparently gray areas that the two provisions in the Charter Schools Act, that the one prohibits religiously affiliated operators and then the other prohibits sectarian programming. He has decided that those are not constitutional and can't be upheld. So with this report that a Catholic church wants to apply, the executive director of the virtual charter school board asked for a legal opinion from the Attorney General O'Connor as to whether those two basically non-religious provisions can be upheld. Because as we all know, there's a little confusion as to where the wall of separation and state stands right now, with some of the school situation. So if there is any hint that a public school system allows any kind of private intrusion, then the Supreme Court has pretty much said you can't exclude religious entities. And I think that's what O'Connor is trying to do here, is saying there's these few differences between a charter school and a traditional public school. You know, therefore, you can't exclude religious entities from operating them. Once you make that leap, then it's a pretty easy jump from there. If you're going to say a church can operate a charter school, then it's pretty likely the church is going to be able to operate it to some degree how it wants. The government can't intrude into churches and into religious schools. So it's a slippery slope. And the executive director is trying to get on top of this before they do have a religiously affiliated applicant to find out if, as the law stands now, is that constitutional? Can they continue to say, you can't be an operator? O'Connor is clearly saying, oh, no, we feel that, you know, this would be religious hostility and that they can be an operator. Even by the end of his memo, he says, well, actually agree that charter schools are public schools for some things, but not for First Amendment purposes. So
convenient.
The practicality of this advisory opinion for this board that's trying to make decisions, it's unhelpful, I would say. It would probably be the kindest thing that I could say.
Now, we sent a 10-page memo this week already to the head of this virtual charter school board, the executive director.
Correct.
And we sent out a press release about it, and you have been spending today doing press calls.
Done a couple interviews. Really like that, because I think we need to support, prior to our intervention here, there have been some public school entities in Oklahoma that have said, just hang tight here. You know, we don't think the attorney general's opinion is right. And, you know, no. And so I think it's important that the other side gets some support here.
Yes, some fortification.
And I mean, clearly we can see that if the decision is that religious entities can operate charter schools, that's not going to be the end of their intervention and trying to get into the public school system. So certainly concerning to us.
So let's recap the arguments in this memo that you drafted, Karen.
Holy cow. Okay. All right.
So in this memo, we point out that if Oklahoma charter schools are state actors, then the charter schools are restricted by the Oklahoma Constitution, which says no money shall go to sectarian institutions and schools, and, of course, the U.S. Constitution. And you make the argument in the memo that Oklahoma charter schools, of course, are state actors. And we rebut a bunch of case law that O'Connor cited, which was either misinterpreted, irrelevant?
I think that whenever you read case law and you have a bias, you tend to look at what you want to find, and then apply it that way. So I think we understand that there are some, the Attorney General and the Governor of Oklahoma have some religious bias. And so I think he looks specifically for cases and findings in cases that would allow his decision. So he could apply that to his decision, get to the end result that he's looking for.
So he's cherry picking.
He's cherry picking and manipulating. But I think with the fact that some of these decisions in the Supreme Court have basically brought up more questions than answered in the recent past.
Well, let's look at one of those that the memo kind of points out why it does not apply. This case called Trinity Lutheran.
Yeah.
In which the High Court held that one church, could not be excluded from a public grant for a one-time grant for playground surfacing material.
Right.
So, you would say does not open the door to religious institutions running charter schools. Why is that?
No, and I would think, in part from Trinity Lutheran, the question that came out of that is, what is a generally available public benefit? And O'Connor's, Attorney General O'Connor's opinion is basically trying to say that operating a public charter school is a benefit that we cannot exclude religious entities from, where I would say it's a 180. A public charter school, it should be the benefit to the taxpayers, the students, and the families. It's not, shouldn't be considered a benefit to the operators. But the other thing is, yeah, a one-time grant, a one-time recycled rubber situation is totally different from an ongoing contract between public bodies and the charter school. This is an ongoing contract with government. It's not even in the same room as recycled rubber as a one-time benefit.
And also this text, our memo points out the most significant concern, which is the constitutional rights of conscience of public school students,
yeah,
to get a secular education free of religious indoctrination, because that's why our public schools exist, to educate, not
correct,
to indoctrinate. So we are, I think we're almost out of time here. Thank you very much, Karen, for all of your legal prowess here in contesting this irresponsible decision by the Oklahoma Attorney General, and I'm sure the board was grateful to get the other side.
I hope it helps them. Yep, hope it helps.
And when we come back, we'll be back in a minute, and we're going to hear a meeting of the minds, a conversation between my absent co-host, Dan Barker, author of Losing Faith in Faith, and comedian, actress, and playwright Julia Sweeney of Letting Go of God. It's fun. Don't miss it. Free Thought Radio will be right back.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and comedian, actress, playwright, and author Julia Sweeney is probably best known for portraying androgynous Pat on Saturday Night Live. She has been in many movies, she's written books, she's been in many TV series, including Sex and the City, where she played a nun, which was very hilarious. She just finished up Shrill. I think it's over with its third season. And she is playing in the series American Gods. And we were lucky to persuade her to come and talk last fall to the Freedom From Religion Foundation's audience at our national convention in San Antonio, where she engaged in a public conversation with FFRF co-president Dan Barker. And I thought, since he's absent, it would be nice to play this episode. And I'm calling this conversation A Meeting of the Minds. Let's listen in.
Do you remember being a guest, having a guest role on Sex and the City?
Oh, yes. Well, I worked on that show for 3 years as a writer.
Okay.
So I was only in one episode, so that was...
But,
I definitely remember
but
that.
She played a nun in that,
yes,
episode.
And they said I could read, and I decided to bring Why We Believe, Michael Shermer's book.
Oh,
I thought that would be a nun reading Why We Believe. Like, I knew only like 10 people would get that reference, but I was watching Sex and the City, but
well,
we were
one of the 10. Who were. The Star series, which is more recent, American Gods.
Yes, where I get to be murdered.
Yeah. And
that was fun.
Last time we talked about it, you wouldn't say if you were a god or not. So I don't know if you're free to say that anymore.
Yes, it turns out I was a god.
You were an atheist, yes, playing God.
Yes.
So atheist playing a nun and God. So
yes, yes.
I think you've been at about, what, maybe 5 FF conventions?
I don't know. Yeah, I think so. I never counted that. But many, too many, I just feel like a lot of them.
Do you remember your first time, Julia?
Not specifically.
I mean, your first time as a... Yeah.
As a...
Your first...
yes and yes. No. I don't remember exactly. Did I do the show? I did Letting Go of God at the convention. Did I do it then?
It was 2002, 20 years ago.
Wow. Before I filmed it.
In San Diego.
Yeah.
You gave us a kind of a dry...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You asked us if we would mind helping you out, and you gave up part of it. Do you have like an elevator two-sentence summary for people who haven't seen it? What is Letting Go of God about?
It's a bit of a long day's journey into night because it's long. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes long, but it's just my life going. I wouldn't say I was a devout Catholic. I was just a Catholic. I didn't look into it that much. I used God when it was convenient for me, and I lived a secular life when it wasn't convenient for me. Like, I think that's how most people probably use the idea of God. And then I went through a personal crisis where I had, I experienced this thing where I felt like God came to me and said, the situation was going to be all right, and I felt like I had a really full-on religious
experience.
So you
really believed that there was a God talking to you?
Yeah. I didn't think it was a guy coming down and saying things. I had this feeling of, every time I try to describe it, it seems like I'm making it up and isn't accurate, but it seemed like a light, like it felt like a presence, and I just felt this feeling of, it wasn't sexual like St. Therese or whoever we just heard about earlier, which, by the way, is one of my favorite things, all the saints in the very sexualized God coming to them. But it wasn't like that, but I just felt this feeling like it was going to be all right. And it was very powerful, and I did make a big leap in this particular problem to feeling better. Like, it worked. The idea of God worked, the idea that I felt was loved and everything was going to work out. But then afterwards, I was very curious about that experience. Like, what actually happened? Was it really God? And then I decided, well, I guess God wants me to be a Catholic because I was in this Catholic family and raised Catholic, so I should take it more seriously. So I joined the local Santa Monica, the church in California, and that's when I took a Bible studies class. I thought, let's read this book. And the combination of, I started with Why We Believe, Michael Shermer's book, and then he would reference other books, and I just went from one book to another, and your book was a big book for me, too. And
it's on sale in the back.
Yes, no, I love that book, and it was just like one thing led to another, and I think it was in Dennett's Darwin's Dangerous Idea, but it really could have been any one of a number of books. In combination with doing this Bible study class, that I just accepted that I was an atheist. So it was really almost like my religious experience propelled me to become an atheist because I was just trying to figure it out. And actually, I did kind of learn more about what happens in the brain and why that thing might have happened to me. Anyway, so it's that story that I just told, but with jokes.
You did say that for a while.
That's Letting Go of God.
You have this talent of making everything funny, which some people
don't
have.
Say that on stage. Now they're going to expect me to be really funny at everything I say.
But just use that voice. You did say that for a while you thought you might want to be a nun.
Yes. Oh, I absolutely want to be a nun.
So you were taking it really seriously.
Well, to me, I just love the glamour of the nun life. I think it had a lot to do with all the nun movies I watched. I think it was really like... The Trouble with Angels was like, Trouble with Angels was a big one for me. I wanted to be like Rosalind Russell. I wanted to be a nun. Like, it was like the movie version of Catholicism is what I wanted to be. I didn't realize I just wanted to be an actress. So, yeah. And also, you know, when I was growing up, and I think it's still partly true, the nuns were the feminists. Like, if you're a kid growing up in a very Catholic town, my town, Spokane, everyone I knew was Catholic, the nuns were the women who chose not to get married, who chose to be activists, many of them. Like, they were a lot more interesting to me, those nuns, than the mothers. Like, I thought if you only had two roads to choose between, motherhood and being a nun, I mean, being a nun seemed quite great. I mean, like, you didn't... I don't know. know. It just seemed great.
You did say in the play, in the movie, that you had a picture of Jesus on the wall that you fantasized about.
Yeah.
So being married to Jesus, was that a part of... I mean, you were...
A
young
yeah.
woman with feelings and, you know...
Yeah, I mean, you can... I mean, God, I'm still marveling all the time at how religion works on so many levels. Like, it really delivers on so many levels, and yet it's so wrong and so insidious and it's so corrupting of our society all at the same time. But it's like, as an institution, you can be not a bright person and be in it. You can be a smarter, detailed person and be in it. You can have an emotional relationship with it. Like, it's a big spectrum of things. And of course, yeah, Jesus, the whole idea of Jesus loving you, this person in the sky, make him attractive. He's looking out for you. He knows all your trials and tribulations, and he's there to comfort you. I mean, of course, that's like the perfect boyfriend.
And you're married to him, and you even wear a ring if you're
yeah.
a nun.
Oh,
if you're
yeah.
a nun, yeah.
That's right.
So I was raised Protestant, and in my upbringing, I thought Catholicism was way overblown. All these images and colors and bleeding statues and smoke and candles. And I thought, what in the heck? Like, it was kind of like a Roman invasion or something.
Yeah.
But I had a Catholic friend who thought Protestants were just sterile and dry. And
yeah.
You know what I mean? So did you feel that way about Protestants?
Yeah, I did. I did feel that way. I still have a little bit of a snobbery about Catholicism in the hierarchy of horrible religions. Because... first of all, it has all these characters. I mean, like, later I would go into churches that were so bare and stripped down, and I think, God, a Catholic church, you get all these faces, you get to see all these scenes, you know, it's like what it's like being at the movies. You get to see this scene and that scene and the stained glass, and, you know, there's, you know, heroes and violence, and if you're bored with the sermon, you can look over here and see this scene. I mean... I loved it. And
we thought it was idolatry. We thought it was like, oh.
Well, it is idolatry. Of course it is. But but actually, that was so smart of them to bring that in from the Roman idea of the pantheon of gods. And, I mean, it's very similar. So that was a good move, I think.
That is Dan Barker and Julia Sweeney hobnobbing during a public conversation at FFRF's National Convention last October in San Antonio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and when we come back, we'll hear the conclusion.
Garofalo, are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm back with the conclusion of Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are listening to comedian, actress, and letting go of God playwright, the brilliant Julia Sweeney, converse with my co-host Dan Barker. This was a conversation at FFRF's recent national convention. Dan, of course, is the author of many books himself, including Losing Faith in Faith, From Preacher to Atheist, that is available at ffrf.org/shop. He's written, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 books. And since Dan is not here this week, I thought it would be fun to hear his voice, and let's conclude this excerpted conversation between him and Julia Sweeney.
And then I was just asked, leaving December 26th, to fly to Bahrain and Kuwait and do the USO Entertain the Troops tour.
Wow.
And I was amazed because you have to be vetted. Like, the military has to say it's okay. And I thought, oh, God, somebody's going to look and see I'm an atheist and say I can't come. But I got approved. And the funny thing is that I'm the girl. So when you... They make you watch this movie about the history of the USO and Bob Hope because they're the ones who fund it. And, of course, it's Bob Hope with, like, Rita Hayworth saying, boys, this is what you're fighting for, boys, you know, like that. And the idea that I, at 63, I'm going to be like, you're fighting for your grandma, boys! That I'm the girl! Oh, that makes me laugh. Okay.
Well, there are atheists in the military, so...
No, I know that. So. I'm just so suspicious and skeptical of everyone.
In the entertainment industry, TV or movies, is religion a problem? I mean, is atheism a problem in Hollywood?
Well, no. Well, they don't care about... Well, they... It's, I mean, of course, Hollywood is a huge business with all kinds of people and all kinds of religious feelings. So it's impossible to say everyone's one way or the other. But to me, what I noticed the most is when I did Letting Go of God, all my Hollywood acquaintances... We're like, oh, yes, oh, I can't believe you were ever a believer. That was ridiculous. But what I want you to do is meet with my astrologer. Because, so I realized, like, they have just as many superstitions, but it's just different things. It just isn't religious. Huh. I mean, traditionally religious, but they're still superstitious. And actually, just last week, my friend Maria, who was the first person I ever knew who just said she was an atheist without flinching, that, you know, when we met 35 years ago. Last time I saw her, she was telling me about tarot cards that she's reading. And I was like, Maria, I'm so disappointed. No.
Is it serious or is it just a game for her?
Yeah. Well, she said, yeah. She goes, oh, I just find comfort in it. It's like, how? Why? Why would you? Why would anyone?
Maybe it's like playing solitaire or something. She's just having cards or...
No, she thinks it's actually the universe is sending her a message. I mean, like, that the card you pick... I was trying to get her off the hook myself. I was like, it's like you get this card, so then it makes you think of this. And she's like, no, because that might happen. It's like, Anyway.
It's like the guy that had a horseshoe in his office and his buddy said, you don't believe in that, do you? And he says, no, but I heard it works even if you don't. So.
That's so funny. That reminds me because in my show, the whole idea of belief. So this ended up because my mom just had said it to me right before I filmed Older and Wider. The big objection of my mother when I stopped believing was that it wasn't that I didn't believe. It was that I told people that I didn't believe. That was the thing. So I learned it's really about, for her, it's about saying, I'm a member of the community, whatever it is you say we all believe in, I believe in it. Like, that's what mattered. So then we had this argument, and she said, why do you have to tell people about it? And I said, well, it's really profound to me. I mean, how can I not tell people about it? She goes, don't you think half the people in the church and the pews don't feel the same way you do? And I'm like, what are you saying? You know, and then she said something like, she goes, why can't you just pretend to believe? And I said, well, then it wouldn't be belief. And then she said, that's exactly what it is, Julie. Make believe. She understood how great of a line that was. And in her way, she was saying, I don't really believe either, but we're all part of this community, and that's the way we show we're part of the community.
Can you tell the story about how she learned that you were an atheist?
Wait, is that from...
From Letting Go of God? She read it in the paper.
Oh, well, in a way, that was terrible of me. I mean, so I was talking about this experience. I was losing my faith, and I was doing stand-up, and just talking about what was happening in my life. So, of course, you know, I was explaining my questioning of it and what I learned in the Bible and what I learned from my reading. And then I started doing, you know, I kind of started putting it together into a show. And then I did something in D.C. What was it? I don't remember. Anyway, it was some event, and I spoke, and that was like the first time I kind of put it all together, and my hometown paper, and of course I did not tell my parents. My dad, a daily communicant Catholic, who I loved very much and was a wonderful man, and my mother, who's like socially very important to be Catholic, they did this big, you know, it was like a headline, not on the front page, but like on the inner page, Julia Sweeney comes out as an atheist. And I had no idea that person was, there was a reporter. First of all, who the f*** cares that I'm an atheist? I mean, I never occurred to me that that would be a headline in the Spokane paper. Like, but it was, and it was really humiliating for them. And it was, and they had just weird responses to it, of course. And it was really upsetting. I'm not making it funny. Like, it is in the show. I do feel bad about it. I wish I had protected them a little more, or, like, let them know that that could happen. Anyway, my mother called up and was like, you are not an atheist. She was just like, she's going to make me not be an atheist. And I was like, what are you going to do about it? And then she had the priest. She goes, I called Gonzaga, so that's the university in Spokane, and I talked to the, you know, I called the rectory, and the priests are going to talk to you, and you're going to come to Spokane, and you're going to go have dinner with the priests, and they're going to explain to you. And I was like, bring it on. Like, I actually, yeah, convince me. Like, I was like, sure, is there some information I don't have that I need? So I went to Spokane, I went to the dinner, and it was actually, I almost hate saying this to you because, and I didn't put this in my show, because I almost wanted to protect the priests because they were so inept. Like, the whole idea that I had of a priest, you know, like these Jesuits, they were Jesuits, the smart priests, okay. They basically were like, you don't believe in God? And then I was like, no. And they're like, you know better than Thomas Aquinas? And I was like, well, I actually think Thomas Aquinas would be atheist if you were around now. I mean, we just didn't have the scientific information, you know. Oh, you know more than St. Augustine? And I was like, well, I have more access to more information than St. Augustine had. And then I didn't know where it was going. And then one of the priests said, what's it like to live in Hollywood? It was like, they were not going to go there. They just wanted to ask me, have you met so-and-so? Have you? It was all like, and one of those priests that I still follow on Twitter has become such a crazy right-wing Catholic nutcase, and yet he's like so into Hollywood. But I realized they had nothing. I mean, they really didn't have any arguments. And I left there, and my mother's like, so, now are you a Catholic again? It's like, no, you know what? They don't know anything, and they can't even argue with you about it. Like, I was ready to go. And then she was still so upset, and then she wouldn't speak to me for 9 months, and...
But it wasn't just Gonzaga. Didn't you talk to somebody high up in the Vatican, actually?
Well, I had correspondences with a couple of priests at the Vatican. They don't have anything either. The thing is, it's based on nothing. And, you know, they give up very quickly. I mean, like, they... I mean, I really was looking forward to a good debate. They kind of make it like you. How could you know anything? A little bit like that, and a little bit of flattery, and a little bit of like, oh, I'm just the old parish priest, or this is a great institution that's helped a lot of people, you know? I mean, I don't know. In some ways, it probably has helped some people. I mean, it's done a lot more damage than good, I would say, but I can't deny that it isn't helpful to some people. But yeah, they really... Actually, I still am a Twitter... On Twitter, I talk to a Vatican priest, and sometimes we DM each other. He said I should come to the Vatican this time, and he'll show me around.
Would you go?
Well, oh my God, of course I'll go. I'd had an idea to do a podcast called Catholicism. Spreading the seed of doubt.
That is the very funny actress, comedian, and author Julia Sweeney, interviewed by Dan Barker at our 2022 convention in San Antonio. Now, you can watch the entire interview by going to FFRF's website, fffrf.org/conventions, and scroll down to her video. And we have all of the videos up from the speakers, the many interesting and varied speakers at our national convention, up for free to watch. And we also reprint transcripts from convention speeches in our newspaper, Free Thought Today, which is available online under our publications link. And if you're a member, you get it however you like it, by mail, PDF, or an email notice. And in the current December issue of Free Thought Today, we'll be glad to send you a sample copy. We have the entire speech by the wonderful novelist John Irving, mostly talking about that very timely issue of abortion rights. He's such an ardent supporter of reproductive rights and the separation of church and state, and he received FFRF's Emperor Has No Clothes Award he wasn't able to attend in person, but you can watch the remote interview online. And that concludes today's show, and I want to thank engineer Grant Blaschka and my in-person guest Karen Heinemann, and thank you for listening, and a special thanks to the following radio stations for airing Free Thought Radio: WOOMLP 92.9 in Philadelphia, WZML 92.9 in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, WIDE-FM and WMUULP in Madison, Wisconsin, WADR Community Radio in Janesville, Wisconsin, KEOS College Station, Bryan, Texas, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Wool Black Sheep Radio in Bellows Falls, Vermont, New Hampshire, WRIU 90.3 Kingston, Rhode Island, WRFI Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York, and of course, we want to say hello to our podcast listeners. Thank you for listening, and you can give us a thumbs up review if with your podcast provider, and you can also listen to and find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio. Ask for more information at our website, ffrf.org. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.
Thank you to the Freedom From Religion Foundation for coming through on a Friday in the midst of the chaos in the House of Representatives. But it does seem, even on day four, Kevin McCarthy, who has lost his 12th vote, has rallied a 12 to 14 to his side of the dissidents in the so-called Freedom Caucus. Since it is the anniversary of January 6th, the attempted coup by Donald Trump and company, I'm going to play a short that was put up on Democracy Now! Today about the anniversary. And I'll be back with you in about 20 minutes.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today marks 2 years since the January 6th Capitol insurrection, when President Donald Trump incited thousands of supporters to violently storm Congress in an attempt to overturn the 2020 election. The attack on the Capitol briefly shut down Congress as lawmakers fled for their safety from the mob, which included members of the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, and other violent extremist groups, many of them armed. 2 years later, part of Congress has been effectively shut down again. This time, because a group of far-right Republicans, including many who supported the January 6th insurrection, have blocked Republican leader Kevin McCarthy's attempt to become House Speaker. This means no member of the House of Representatives can be sworn in. Over the past 3 days, the House has held 11 votes to choose a speaker. McCarthy has failed each time to win the needed 218 votes to become speaker, despite making numerous concessions to his critics in the so-called Freedom Caucus. This is now the longest speaker election since 1859, just before the Civil War. Meanwhile, President Biden is preparing to give a major speech today marking the second anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. He will also award presidential citizens' medals to 12 people who responded to the insurrection and Trump's attacks on democracy after the 2020 election, among them Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss, a mother-daughter pair of election workers from Georgia who received death threats and torrents of online abuse from Trump supporters. Another honoree will be former Washington, D.C. police officer Michael Fanone, who is beaten and electrocuted with a taser by the right-wing mob. Fanone spoke Thursday and made the link between the January 6th insurrection and the congressional chaos playing out today.
But if I could guarantee one thing about the new House majority, it's this. This is just the beginning. This type of chaos will happen every single day in the House, as some of the most extreme politicians our country has ever seen hold our democracy hostage. I should know. Tomorrow marks 2 years since the day I almost died defending the Capitol from people who thought overthrowing the government was a good idea. The events of that day felt like a wake-up call for me and many others that political violence is real. The worst part is that our elected leaders allowed this to happen. And yet this week, people who encouraged and even attended the insurrection are now taking their places as leaders in the new House majority. People like Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who said insurrectionists would have won on January 6th if she had been involved. Or Representative Matt Gaetz, who encouraged voters to arm themselves at the polls.
That was former Washington, D.C. police officer Michael Fanone. On Thursday, the partner of the deceased Capitol police officer Brian Sicknick, who died one day after responding to the insurrection, sued Donald Trump and two of the rioters who attacked Sicknick for his wrongful death. Brian Sicknick died after suffering two strokes. The medical examiner said the events of January 6th played a role in his condition. Biden will also honor Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who suffered a brain injury after being beaten by rioters. She testified before the January 6th House Select Committee in June.
When I fell behind that line and I saw, I can just remember my breath catching in my throat, because what I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I'd seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground. They were bleeding. They were throwing up. I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos. I can't even describe what I saw.
The second anniversary of the January 6th insurrection comes as five members of the far-right group Proud Boys are on trial for seditious conspiracy. Opening arguments expected next week. We're joined now by Andy Campbell, senior editor at HuffPost and the author of We Are Proud Boys, How a Right-Wing Street Gang Ushered in a New Era of American Extremism. Andy, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. So today is the second anniversary. 2 years ago today, the violent mob attacked the Capitol. And it is so interesting, as they congressional proceedings then for a time, that today, 2 years later, we're seeing the House paralyzed. No member of the House of Representatives can be sworn in, the new ones or the old ones. No one gets classified briefings, nothing, because of what's happening here. Can you draw a parallel between who was involved 2 years ago and who is involved today?
Sure, and thanks, Amy, for having me on again. Look, we are seeing a GOP that's hoist by its own petard. I mean, this is a party that has built its identity around nationalism, around bigotry, around political violence, and particularly around trolling, not around policy necessarily. And so now you have these 20 holdouts who are that directive personified. You have people like Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you have Paul Gosar, an avowed sort of white nationalist character who pals around with extremists and goes on goes to white nationalist conferences to speak. And so you have these very extreme far-right voices throwing a wrench in the spokes, and this is exactly what the MAGA party has built for themselves. And so they're kind of seeing the consequences of their own actions when these holdouts are kind of holding Congress hostage. But what they're doing is they're, you know, displaying power. The very far right, very racist, very loud and popular troll wing of the GOP has sort of been building this parallel power structure alongside the GOP for years under Trump. And now with this, you know, four-vote majority that Republicans have in the House, they're able to exercise that power by holding these the speaker hostage here. And so it's interesting that this is happening on you know, the anniversary of January 6th, because those same people who are holding Congress hostage now are the same people who helped foment the insurrection and who, after the fact, still cast doubt on the 2020 election. Many of them are Trump loyalists and election deniers and voted to overturn the election. And so what we're seeing is that the spirit of January 6th is still very much alive, and we are seeing it play out in the halls of Congress today.
So if you can talk about, since you wrote the book, We Are Proud Boys, the connection between the pro-insurrectionist Congress members and the Proud Boys, and talk about who they are. But I wanted to ask you about the people who are leading this movement right now. I mean, you have, what, Matt Gaetz, the congressman from Florida, who is under investigation for underage sex trafficking. You've got Lauren Boebert from, she ran a restaurant in, what, Rifle, Colorado, called Shooter's Grill. It's been shut down because the owners of the building wouldn't renew her lease. She encouraged her waiters to openly carry guns as they served their customers. And now they've removed magnetometers. This is one of the demands of the of Boebert and the others in this ultra-conservative so-called Freedom Caucus from the House. She had originally, I think it's the reason why House Speaker at the time, Nancy Pelosi, had put up magnetometers, said she was going to carry a Glock onto the floor of the House. Looking at the New York Post, they said she refused to say Tuesday if she plans to bring a gun into the House of Representatives as authorities removed House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's magnetometers from the entrances. Go through these people one by one and talk about their connection to Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, and what happened 2 years ago today.
Sure. I mean, Lauren Boebert is sort of leading the charge here on this ultra-far-right group of holdouts. She, you know, she also called Ilhan Omar a terrorist. I mean, if you try to look at Boebert's policies, they are few and far between. A lot of these guys want to push very nationalist policy. They want to push the, you know, anti-woke agenda. I think they want to criminalize doctors who give gender-affirming care. So these are sort of cruel policies if you look really hard. But most of all, these are sort of bigoted trolls, very connected to the insurrection. You have Paul Gosar of Arizona, who, like I said, went on to speak at a white nationalist conference 2 years running alongside Marjorie Taylor Greene. He said at one point that he fomented the revolution on January 6th. You have Matt Gaetz, who has pushed white supremacist conspiracy theories about the replacement of white men, and has also had Proud Boys work security at his events over the years. And so you have these characters are connected to the insurrection in the way that that they believe it was justified, or at least, you know, believe that the election was stolen. And then the Proud Boys are these foot soldiers that act on behalf of the GOP's grievances. And so while the Boberts and Gaetz's and Marjorie Taylor Greene's of America are pushing, anti-LGBTQ sentiment, anti-immigrant sentiment, the Proud Boys are mobilizing on these grievances. And certainly we know that dozens of Proud Boys joined hundreds of other extremists to make January 6th happen. And so there is absolutely a connection there between the people sitting there in the House today and the Proud Boys. And I think it shows that what we're looking at happening out there Boebert isn't trying to make some real policy changes happen today. She's trying to show power and show that this small group of ultra far right, insurrectionists can wield power in the Republican Party. And the Proud Boys, being those foot soldiers, are sitting in court today. The jury's being selected for their seditious conspiracy trial. And what's interesting about that trial is that we're going to learn more about their connections to the GOP leading up to January 6th, because there are a number of Proud Boys who have already pleaded guilty, and they will be testifying against their own in that seditious conspiracy trial. So we may learn more about their connections to people like Roger Stone, Trump's top confidant, who counts the leader of the Proud Boys, Enrique Tarrio, as one of his friends and mentees. We may learn more about the security that they did for certain members of Congress, and we may learn more about their connection to Trump's inner circle. So this is going to be a huge trial, and it's going to have big implications for the GOP going forward.
So tell us who the Proud Boys are, who Enrique Tarrio and the at least four other Proud Boys who are on trial are.
Right. The Proud Boys are a far-right street gang that were launched in late 2016, early 2017. They were created on the far-right talk show of Gavin McInnes, who is also the co-founder of Vice Media. And he built them to basically mobilize on Trump and the GOP's grievances and go out there and do what crusty old Republicans can't do and fight people in the street based on what the GOP is complaining about. And so on any given day, the complaint might change. Sometimes it's BLM, sometimes it's Antifa, sometimes it's LGBTQ. Right now it's very much LGBTQ. And sometimes it's the election. And they have mobilized over the years over and over based on those grievances. Now, there are five Proud Boys on trial for seditious conspiracy. The Justice Department believes that they had a hand not only in making the insurrection happen on the day, but planning it leading up. Trump, during a debate in 2020, said, "Proud Boys, stand back, stand by." And there's some debate over what he meant by that, but the Proud Boys immediately took it as marching orders. One of the guys on trial, Joe Biggs, posted a blog titled "The Second Civil War is Coming." He said, "Clean your guns, get ammo, and be ready because it's about to get really bad." Enrique Tarrio started raising funds, amassing weapons, amassing people, recruiting. He said, he told me in an interview that he'd never gotten so many recruiting calls than in the moments after Trump said, "Stand back, stand by," at that debate. So they were gearing up for January 6th, which they saw is their final stand for Trump. And they were doing what they do best, which is amassing all of these people, you know, different extremists from across the country, pulling them, telling them to show up on January 6th for Donald Trump. And then, of course, we know from the January 6th committee's reports and the convictions that have already happened that once the plan was in place, once the insurrection began, Trump did absolutely nothing to stop the mob and, in fact, incited them throughout the day to continue on this parade of violence.
I wanted to go to a YouTube video created by Vic Berger back in 2018, which features Gavin McGinnis, the founder of the Proud Boys, discussing the group's origins, as well as calling for violence in the streets.
I started this gang called the Proud Boys. And,
the Proud Boys?
The Proud Boys.
What's Proud Boys about?
We will kill you. That's the Proud Boys in a nutshell. We will kill you. We look nice. We seem soft. We have boys in our name. But like Bill the Butcher and the Bowery Boys, we will assassinate you. Now, part of the reason I agree to do the talk is because I'm allowed to bring all my guys. And we can fight our way in and fight our way out. Eating the shit of these people. I think it's our job to do it. And the cops just turn a blind eye.
So if you can talk about McGinnis and also this latest headline this week, NYPD facing new backlash after officers escorted members of the far-right Proud Boys to a subway station, apparently helping them evade their fares after they sought to disrupt Drag Story Hour, a popular reading event for children at a Queens library last year. And, you know, you have them cracking down on fare evasion, flooding subway stations with police, but they're escorting the Proud Boys?
Right. So, you know, who you heard right there is Gavin McGinnis. That guy you just heard is expected to possibly be a character witness for his Proud Boys at their sedition trial. So you can see what, you know, their ideology is. Their ideology is political violence. He put political violence in their rule set. And certainly the misogyny and anti-LGBTQ and racist sentiment is within their tenets. And so he kind of created that worldview for the Proud Boys and unleashed them on the world. But like you said, with, you know, this incident in New York, the Proud Boys have shown resiliency time and time again, despite being involved in all sorts of domestic extremism events. January 6th and all of the hundreds of prosecutions that we've seen following that has done almost nothing to tamp down our street-level political violent extremist sect. I mean, the Proud Boys are mobilizing today at rapid clip. You have Tucker Carlson on Fox News complaining about Drag Queen Story Hour, and the Proud Boys are going out in the street and harassing and attacking Drag Queen Story Hours. This isn't just in New York. It's all across the country, at public libraries and anywhere they have drag events.